We're back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio, and I'm Bonnie North. War is hell might be a cliche, but it doesn't seem to stop us from waging it. The whole of recorded human history is littered with the stories of battles won and lost, battles over land, or hurt feelings, or maybe a woman abducted whose face was enough to launch 1,000 ships. It's this war, the Trojan War, as set down by the Greek poet Homer in his epic poems The Iliad and the Odyssey, which forms the underlying structure of the play An Iliad, currently playing at the Milwaukee Rep. It's a one-man play, telling the tale in a way we can imagine Homer telling it. Yet somehow, all the ferocity and enormity of the war, and all wars, comes to life on the powerhouse stage. Spring Green-based actor James DeVita plays the poet, and cellist and Mequon native Alicia Storin is his muse, and they join me in the studio now. Welcome both of you to Lake Effect.
Hi, thanks for having us here.
Thank you. It's a thrill.
So, Jim, first things first, an amazing performance.
Oh, thank you.
Well, and Alicia, too, because you are an integral part of that performance behind your scrim.
Yes, thank you.
The play, let's start with what it is, as best as we can describe it. I mean, people really need to see it to kind of get the full effect of it. But you are basically telling the story of a particular war, but telling the story of all wars.
Yeah, I mean, I start, one of the first lines the poet says is, this is the story of the Trojan War. But in the course of the evening, there's many contemporary allusions throughout the play. So you've got both the original Greek story and you've got contemporary allusions about warfare today. So it winds up being a story about humankind and war, and not just specifically the Trojan War. But that's where we start.
And that's the through line, too. I mean,
yeah, it goes through the entire piece. And what the playwrights do wonderfully, Lisa Peterson and Dennis O'Hare, is interweave these contemporary allusions throughout. So you start hearing the story in the context of our experience of life. And it oddly works on an audience. It's a very powerful evening of theater because it's kind of sneaks up on you that way. You think it's just about Hector and Achilles and Agamemnon and Odysseus, these names we kind of know but don't really know. And that's really fun to get that detail and really learn what those relationships were. And then slowly, though, with all the contemporary allusions, it starts to build into more of an experience of humankind and warfare, in my opinion.
Now, this is really a one-person show. It's a one-man show. But Alicia, your part as the cellist, it is a duet, even though you're not there every single moment. You're not playing every single moment. Was the cello part of the original thing, or is that something you guys added?
Well, the script indicates that, you know, there is some sort of muse presence. They encourage you to actually use a person, use a musician. You don't have to. There have been productions that don't, and they're just as powerful. Lucky for me, Milwaukee decided to add a cellist. And so, you know, I'm there, I'm not there. I'm all sorts of different roles to either help Jimmy or tell him to shut up or tell him to keep.
She rebukes me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you're reprimanded by her in a number of times. Yes.
That's my favorite part.
You get to
But she's wonderful because she is always present there. Once she finally shows up, which is I love the calling for her, calling for the muses to help me. And she's a little late today, so I'm struggling. And once she shows up, the entire feeling of the play changes. And then she as I said, either supports me or rebukes me or guides me, or and at times I think as the play progresses, starts to empathize with what the poet is going through telling this story.
Absolutely.
So we have a wonderful kind of symbiosis that happens between us.
Yeah, I think I'm generally on your side, even though it doesn't always feel
that
way.
Yeah, I think that stuff is tough love.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I hear those notes.
Yeah.
When she makes me go somewhere else that I don't want to go, because part of what we invested in, too, is who is the story of the poet, not just the story of the evening. Who's the story of the man telling the story? And the playwright says the conceit of this is, here's a man who's been doomed for eternity to tell this story over and over again until humankind stops waging war as a way to settle problems. So obviously I've not been successful.
You have some work to do on that.
Yeah. So he keeps going out. And we use that and saying, well, you know, the story's not – doesn't seem to work. And on this night, I think this poet decides to tell it a little differently. And that's where he starts to bring into contemporary allusions to try and make you really see what I'm talking about, because it hasn't been working. Just doing the Fagles translation has not been working for the last, you know, 2,500 years.
Right. And there's that sense of and quite literally being locked in a room until you tell the story and people get it.
Yeah. On this most basic storytelling level is what's going to happen next. And if we can keep you engaged in what's going to happen next, both visually and aurally. And I think that's what the show does really well too. As you're saying, both with lights and sound, and the set is amazing. And,
yeah, the set, you know, the lighting, all of it is astonishing. And that's a big stage too.
It's a huge stage. Yeah, so when I first accepted the job quite a while ago, I thought for sure it would be in the steam, the small space that we have at the Milwaukee Rep. And I was intimidated at first, but now what I found, I think the choices that I wound up making, I would never have made in a small space, because I needed to make choices that were much larger than myself to fill that space. And in that way, I think it's actually very much closer to the perhaps the style of what Greek theater was when they were trying to fill a 3,000-seat outdoor space with no amplification. So their gestures were large. It was very presentational. And so that kind of heightened acting and language juxtaposed against some of the, you know, very contemporary language and contemporary illusions, I think is really interesting too.
I think it's also very effective because as an audience member, you're not – in one place all the time. You're forced to like, oh, wait, okay, we're here now. And that makes you pay attention. It like, it's almost like a snapping of the finger or in your case, the bow, you know, the note goes or something happens and you go, oh, wait, we've shifted again. You know, there's another part of the story coming in.
Actually, right, because it keeps you off guard a little bit. You're not sure because it looks like I'm going to be doing Greek and all of a sudden. And then I just start looking at you and talking to you or else, you know. So it's like, okay, this is all right. And that's I credit the playwrights with that. It's a pretty great structure.
And one of the things that the playwrights also do is they infuse humor in here. And, you know, you think of war, people aren't going to be laughing. But there are some very funny parts. Was it odd for you as the performer the first time to get it in front of people and, you know, have them laugh in places you weren't expecting?
Yeah, I had some good ideas. I was just hoping they would laugh, you know, because whenever a play like that, I've been in many tragedies and a lot of Greek, you know, that when does the audience allow themselves to laugh? Because they always kind of feel like they can't. And in anything great, at least in our dramatic and works, tragedies, we always look for the humor just as a storytelling aspect because you don't want to see 3 hours. This is not a three-hour show. I'm taking some of the bigger classic, you know, Shakespeare tragic. You don't want to see 3 hours of tragedy. You have to instill it just as a storyteller with variety. So I was very pleased that they did laugh in some places, I thought, and more than pleased when they laughed in places I didn't think they would laugh. But it's part of the character of the poet, and you know, he's a performer, as whoever the original Homer was, if there was a Homer. These stories were passed down orally, so he was a performer. And so as any performer knows, you got to keep your audience, you know, both entertained and engaged. And the humor, I think what the humor does is it allows us to have a relationship. The audience gets to know me after 15, 20 minutes. Oh, I can laugh at this guy. He's not just serious. And so when we move into some of the deeper moments as the play progresses, we now have a relationship and you can go there with me in some of those heartbreaking scenes. So I think in that way the structure also lets us get to know each other slowly in the beginning of the play.
Yeah. Is the music original? Did you write this?
Josh Schmidt is actually the composer. So it is all original to the Milwaukee Rep production. Which is very exciting.
Difficult to learn?
Yeah, it was a very interesting process for me just because Josh wrote a score before we went into rehearsals. So I was trying to study it and figure out where everything fit in with the script. But then once rehearsals started, absolutely nothing was the same. We just tore the score apart and made decisions based on what, you know, everybody in the room thought would work. I mean, my score, my part was being written through previews. So that was a little terrifying just for me to think to myself, I need to have all of this memorized and it's just being put together now. But some, I don't know, magical muse of my own made it possible for me to memorize it easily. And I just know it so well now. And I think, you know, I can attribute a lot of that to Josh and just his writing and being able to just kind of infuse that into what's actually happening on stage.
In any live performance, things happen. Do you know it well enough now where if he shifts something, you're able to improvise and follow him and yet stay true and vice versa?
Absolutely.
She's been doing that since the rehearsal hall. But that was like, we didn't know it. She's so just lovely, not only talented, but lovely person. But she's had my back since we started. And right away, I think you started to see that. Nothing huge, but there are little things. And a lot of her cues are all physical gestures I make, lines that I make. It's a huge script. And I've been sure every night I screw up some line somewhere. I either miss it or paraphrase it. But I know that she's got my back, so she can adjust. And either if it's something important, hold it. She'll play it at another moment. Or if I forget a cue altogether, she's just, you know, I'll find out afterwards that I did. But it's all, you know, it's a long evening. And I mean, part of the joy of theater, it is slightly different every night. And to have that be really true, there's always the danger of it will be different, not in a positive way. But that's where the danger lies. That's where you can really feel it. So, and these mistakes are not huge, but usually nobody knows but us.
But that's also part of the risk of living.
Yeah, it's true. We could do this absolutely safely, and you know, but this is a dangerous production. I mean, I don't mean physically dangerous.
Literally, it is a little physically
dangerous.
There are some places you're climbing around where I thought, oh dear, don't slip.
Yeah, from my age, I just had a long massage yesterday, but I say I kind of feel like an older football player that's playing more than a little past his prime. I can still do it, but boy, it hurts.
Yeah, the knees aren't quite as
heavy. You should see me getting ready for the show. It's ace bandages and tape on both knees. I got my brace on my knee. You know, so it's a half hour just to get my clothes on.
Right.
And it is a very physical performance. It's a physical style of performing, particularly in the bigger, the Greek moments. So I think it's appropriate and kind of fun also. And it's just my age is just a little hard, that's all. So I'm saying I feel like an athlete that has a playoff game every night. So your whole day is geared towards how much sleep you get, when you eat, how much you eat, how much you exert yourself. I usually don't talk during the day. I don't really have anybody to talk to anyway. I'm alone at the Knickerbocker. But you take care of yourself the entire day leading up to that night. And you've got 8 shows a week. So most of your time is about the show.
And making sure that you're ready to do it.
You're physically and vocally and also mentally focused to do the show. And that's not true with all roles. You know, some roles are smaller and medium-sized roles. You know, your day can be fairly normal. But something like this, it's just you and myself and Alicia. And there's 500-600 people out there. It's different.
Well, it's just you, but you play multiple. Every character there is you.
Yeah, I don't even know how many characters we play out there. Do you know?
No.
There are many. Many, 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 many.
Yeah, I lost count after a dozen or so.
Yeah. I was going to say at least 20, 25 mm-hmm. or something.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, it's not about entertaining with you the audience with how facile I am with different characters, because it's not like putting on a different costume and a completely, completely different voice. It's more a spirit or a being of the character. So a slight shift in weight, a slight shift to the tone of the voice, maybe the voice just gets a little higher or a little lower. But when you have the audience, when you have their focus, you can make a very minor shift and they can see that you're someone else. That's the challenge of it. And you have two like major, major characters like Achilles and Hector and Agamemnon, very distinct characters in Andromache. And then some of the minor characters, you know, the other 20 minor characters.
Who pop in and out. Yeah. Sometimes they only have a line or two, but they are key to whatever's happening in the story. Which, again, as a viewer, you watch that and I had no problem knowing who was who.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
It's like, you know, no, it's not the same person that he was, you know, 5 minutes ago over there. No, not at all. You just allowed me
to go,
here's this person. And I think the music helps with that too, because there are times when you play certain things and you kind of go, oh, okay, that cued me that something else is going to happen or somebody else is coming in or something.
Like repeat, like Achilles?
Kind of, yeah. There's a few repeated kind of that.
Motifs, like?
Yeah, might indicate Achilles or Andromache, things like that. So, you know, it indicates, you know, the tone of the character at present.
And she'll also sometimes lead me in with a sound, which will let the audience know, oh, we're going somewhere else. They may not know right away, but then, you know, like when we go in, you know, a cloud shrouded over him, that music pulls me into the next scene and the audience knows, oh, we're going somewhere else.
Totally.
Which I would imagine is such a help.
Oh, gosh.
For you.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You know, because you do have to carry this whole story.
Yeah, every night it's absolutely authentic acting when I turn around and she appears and I'm like almost in tears. I'm so happy she's there. And that's not acting.
I can see the authenticity in your smile every night.
She is my god, and I call her goddess every night too.
So, right.
And she is.
Well, we are going to hear a tiny little scene from this wonderful production. Can you set it up? Because this is one where you do a couple of different characters.
Yeah, this is a little scene where we get to meet Hector and his wife Andromache. Part of the show is getting you to know Hector and Achilles well enough that you care for them and have an investment in them by the end of the play when they have to fight to the death. So this is an earlier scene where you're getting to know Hector as a family man. And Hector was known to be a really good husband and a good father. So it's a scene between Andromache, his wife, and Hector. And Andromache is also holding their baby boy, Astyanax, who's about 6 months old. So I go back and forth between Hector and Andromache in this scene. And Alicia also plays in the back.
All right. Well, let's hear it.
Hector reaches for the baby. But Astyanax suddenly wails. I go, what did I do? What did I do? Shh, it's your helmet. Take it off. Take it off. I go, oh, no. Don't be afraid. It's only Daddy's helmet. Here. Someday you'll wear a helmet just like this. Someday you'll be an even greater soldier than your father. You'll ride a horse. A dark one, just like mine. You'll fly on that horse, fly through the air. You'll come home wearing the bloody gear of the mortal enemy you killed in battle. That's enough. Reckless one, Hector. Your fiery courage will destroy you. Have you no pity on him, our helpless son? Or on me and the destiny that weighs me down? Your widow now so soon? Andromache, why so desperate? No man will hurl me down to death against my fate. And fate? No man alive has ever escaped it, neither brave man nor coward, I tell you. It's born with us the day that we are born.
I know, but Hector, if you stay home, you...
Come, I have to go. Give me a kiss. Now go home, love. Don't cry. Pray.
And that was a scene from An Iliad with James DeVita and Alicia Storin. Thank you so much for that. It's only a taste of what you would get if you see the whole show. And I can't thank you both enough for taking time out of your rest time to come in and talk to us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us on today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
James DeVita stars as the poet in the Milwaukee Reps production of An Iliad. Cellist Alicia Storin is the muse. The show runs through the 23rd of March, and there are production photos and links at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks, as always, for tuning in today. We're looking forward to having you join us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned now. Fresh air comes your way next.